Clint Sterner, Jeremy Branham, one game after the Houston Rockets trade Clint Capella. They get back Robert Covington. They go into L.A. with their all-in system, the small ball style, and they beat the best team in the West, 121-111. I don't know a better statement victory the Houston Rockets could have had against an opponent that you consider to be the favorite to win the NBA Finals.
You hit the nail on the head, man. This was a statement W. When you look at this thing, it was a day after deadline. It's the first day that Covington could be a part of your lineup, the first day that you could see, that the Houston Rockets fans could see the team play without Capella. What are they going to look like? And, oh, by the way, they're playing the number one team that on paper is a difficult matchup for the small ball that you have now bought completely into as a Houston Rockets organization. So the game was huge before they ever tipped it. It was huge. And what a statement W that the Rockets were able to get out on the West Coast. And there's a couple of things that make this thing a statement W. And first and foremost, it validates the moves. It validates, to me, and it's a small sample size, but when you look at it, it validates the move in so many different ways. But let's talk about it from a national media perspective. These guys were being called fools. They were being called cheap.
Yeah.
It's never going to work. It's the smallest lineup in the last 50 years to take an NBA floor in a regular season matchup. And they go out there and they do what the Rockets have done well over a long period of time, which is shoot the long ball and get to the free throw line. But they do it in very impressive fashion. And Covington, who was the centerpiece of the move for the Houston Rockets, he makes two three-pointers towards the end of the game that pushed the Rockets' lead to a point where the Lakers had no chance in the last minute and a half of the game. And throughout the game, there was more opportunity than has been there in the past relative to James Harden and Westbrook being able to drive to the rack. And so you just talk about, whether you're talking about personnel or you're talking about the scheme, either way you slice it, the buy-in, the statement W, this validates what the front office did and the move that Daryl Morey made and the scheme that Mike D'Antoni wants to execute with.
I think part of the validation too is seeing Robert Covington in a Houston Rocket uniform, right? Seeing
him. Yeah.
I know he played seven games with the Rockets whenever he was a rookie, but it's a different Robert Covington now. And yes, small ball lineup, but Covington, he's got length. I mean, he's 6'6", but he's got long arms, can defend pretty much anybody. He had that block against Anthony Davis. I know it was from the help side, but I think the validation for the system was great. I think the validation of seeing Robert Covington on the floor for the Houston Rockets was great as well.
Yeah, look, like I said, I mean, Robert Covington, he contributed. And there was a noticeable attempt to drive the lane, and that lane was less crowded when you have the ability to stretch the floor. So when you talk about Robert Covington coming in here, you talk about the Rockets getting the W last night versus the Lakers, that win validated the moves, whether you're talking about from a personnel standpoint or a scheme standpoint. I tell you what, the W also, to me, it showcased the power of having an identity, right? The value of having an identity. There was no doubt about it if you watched that game last night that with these moves, the Rockets want to spread the floor. They want to play faster. They want to move without the ball. They want to move the ball. They want to get more open shots. They want to get to the rack. And that identity, one of the guys last night on TNT actually alluded to the Rockets are one of very few teams that have an identity, that believe in that identity. Now, a lot of people, you can cuss it, you can knock it, you can dislike it, but when it's all said and done, there's an identity with Houston Rockets basketball, and the guys top to bottom are bought in, and it's blatantly obvious. It is a different style of ball right now than 10 days ago in Houston.
D'Antoni alluded to that in the postgame show, that, you know, the commitment of the players is something that they want to see. Not that anybody was questioning it, but you can start to doubt yourself if you're getting out-rebounded by 20 every single night. But this is part of that. I mean, the power of an identity that you go into L.A., you go into Staples Center, you beat the best team in the Western Conference, doing it with the identity you're trying to establish, that sends a message from the top with the ownership all the way to the 12th guy on the bench.
JB, it's the only way you have a chance, right? If your identity is going to play small ball, move without the ball, knock down threes, drive in the lane, penetrate the lane, really put pressure on the other team's big guys to either shade back in the lane or extend to the perimeter and on defense, everybody's got to buy in. The only way that this thing works, really, there's no debating it. The only way that this small ball works is if everybody top to bottom buys into what they're trying to do. And when you watch the game last night, one game, one big game, look, the players had plenty of reason to be full of energy, full of juice, and they were last night. When you watch that game, there's no doubt about it that the identity is bought into. These guys believe in what they're doing, and it's extremely powerful when you talk about giving yourself an opportunity to make a run at a championship. I don't know what's going to happen at the end of the year. I don't know what's going to happen in the playoffs, but I know that the Rockets playing small ball, completely bought in, gives them a better chance than what they were doing.
JB and Clint going over the Rockets' victory over the Lakers last night, 121-111. We're at the 34th annual TriStar Collectors Show at NRG Arena. How about the game of Harden? You know, 14 points, yeah. 7 rebounds, 7 assists. You look at just the box score, you think, you know, pretty pedestrian game, 3 of 10 from the floor, just 1 of 6 from 3. On paper, doesn't look great.
Yeah. I think that's the tell-all. I think if you watch the way that James Harden has adjusted his game over the first half of this season, are they even halfway yet?
Yeah, they're over halfway.
Okay, well, if you don't see how James Harden has adjusted his game, then I can't have a conversation with you. Like I don't understand what you're watching. That when I watched that basketball game last night, I don't know. It's hard to believe that there was no dribble, 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 right? And then just either move the ball with 3 seconds left in the shot clock or throw up a long three. I don't recall that happening one time. Now, there's some times he's playing iso ball, yeah, but he's not just milking the shot clock, right? James Harden is a guy that has the freedom to take any shot on the floor. And when he crosses half court, he can take any shot on the floor that he wants to. And the fact that he deferred to the hot hand, who was Westbrook last night, the fact that he realized how hot his teammates were shooting the ball around him, and he chose to move the ball instead of try to force the issue, was eye-opening. And to me, that's the biggest sign of, hey, the message is being sent loud and clear. The message is being sent loud and clear that everybody's got to buy in, and you've got to move the ball, you got to move without the ball, you got to help others get open shots. And James Harden is bought in. I think that's a dangerous thing, and that's a powerful thing.
Harden was getting a lot of the attention yesterday, double teams, he was passing out of it. The Rockets were just constantly moving, constantly putting on that pressure, constantly on the attack on the offensive end against the best team in the West.
Yeah, look, I'll tell you another thing that was obvious with with Robert Covington is that ability, because the buy-in's not just on the offensive end, right?
Right.
The buy-in's on the defensive end as well, because with Robert Covington, you clearly don't have that 7-footer that, even though it's rare in 2020 basketball, you don't have that 7-footer that can protect the rim if AD, or at least attempt to protect the rim if AD starts backing down. There were times in that game when there were desperate efforts to get the ball in the paint and take advantage of their size advantage. And on the defensive end of the floor, this basketball team's willingness to give help defense and double team when necessary and play ultimately with more energy on the defensive end of the floor was noticeable as well. So it wasn't – I don't know which end's contagious. Right? I don't know if it's the defensive end that's contagious and creating more energy and effort on the offensive end, or if it's vice versa, or if it's just an understanding that they've all got to play with more energy and effort and movement. But it doesn't just affect the offensive end. It affects the defensive end, and it was impressive last night.
Yeah, the Rockets look good on both ends of the floor. Still some work to be done. We'll get into some of that a little bit later. Rockets are in action tonight as well. They go to the Phoenix Suns as they play the second leg of a back-to-back.
You know, another way to look at this thing is it the Westbrook effect? You know what I mean?
Playing well right now.
Well, you know, he's playing really well right now. There's no doubt about it. But it's just his style of play is contagious. You know, his style of play is one where, you know, I think Harden is more willing to buy in. Mike D'Antoni's a guy where he said in the pregame, as you look up, he said, we got to play to Russ's strengths. That was his initial statement, was we've got to play to Russell's strengths. And he said, I think Harden's okay either way.
Right.
And so now not only does that friendship between Harden and Westbrook mean something to where Harden's probably a little more accepting of the change, you got a head coach that's realizing that Westbrook, you got to play to his strengths as well. And so just the Westbrook effect overall of, hey, you're going to pay these two guys this kind of money. You got one of them that gets to the rack. You got one of them that'll accept maybe a little bit of a lesser role in Harden because it's Westbrook. The best formula for success is what these cats are doing. So I'm looking forward to watching again tonight. What time's that tip? 8 o'clock?
8 o'clock.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to watch that too.
No Russ tonight, though. Won't play at the second leg of a back-to-back, but still the small ball lineup, of course. Yes, small sample size. Yes, one game. It couldn't start off any better for the Houston Rockets. I want to circle back to something whenever we return. We were talking about the identity with buy-in being powerful. I want to ask you about who does that make you think about in the city. Also, when we come back, Astros are clearly the villains in Major League Baseball. There was an all-time great who sounded off on that. We discuss it next. We tell you who it was on Houston Sports Leader, Sports Radio 610. Fletch Turner, Jeremy Branham for the 34th annual Houston TriStar Collectors Show at NRG Arena. I wanted to circle back to something, Clint, about the power of having an identity. Because whenever you said that, I was like, you know what? That makes me think of somebody. And the identity with the buy-in is powerful.
I know where you're going.
Where am I going with this, then, if you know where I'm going?
No, go ahead. You got it.
Well, it reminds me a little bit of, you know, we're over here at NRG Arena. It reminds me of the team that's just right around the corner.
Yeah, look, I mean, I think if you look at the Texans, the talent offensively is in place. I think there's a lack of identity. I've said it from the jump that I think it's a combination of Bill O'Brien's game plan offense trying to gel with Deshaun Watson's power spread skill set and experience. And I think we saw flashes of that last year. I don't know what the ultimate goal is as far as do they want to be game plan specific. I would not expect Bill O'Brien, as long as he's in charge of the offense, to change that approach. And truth of the matter is that's not the best system that fits Deshaun Watson. That's not the best identity that fits Deshaun Watson. And so that's a real struggle that the Texans are going to have to try to figure out offensively in order to get the best production out of their quarterback and out of their franchise quarterback and a guy they're fixing to pay, you know, $37-38 million a year to. So there's definitely a lack of identity offensively for the Houston Texans. It's funny you say that, because when I'm watching last night, I'm watching the Rockets and I'm going, the one thing, I don't know if we're going to win this game or not. At halftime, it was 63-63.
Yeah.
It looked like the Rockets were working extremely difficult to get to 63. And it looked like the Lakers were easy, effortlessly coasting to the first half to get to their 63. The Rockets had to work a lot harder. So I wasn't sure how it was going to turn out. I wasn't sure if they were going to have enough juice in the second half to get that W. But the one thing by halftime you knew was blatantly obvious was they had an identity, everybody was bought in, and it was powerful for a very short period of time. And that identity is the reason that they were able to have success. The buy-in is the reason they were able to have success. And so when you look at the Houston Texans, the question isn't, to me, I'm not a rearview mirror guy. I'm a windshield guy. I'm looking out the front windshield.
There's a reason it's a lot bigger type of deal.
Yeah, there you go. I like the way you finish that. But to me, you know, I look out the front windshield and I go, okay, you know, what can the Texans possibly do if they get that identity, whatever their identity is going to be, can they get there? Can they completely buy in? And if they do, how high is the ceiling? And I'm here to tell you, I believe that that ceiling's extremely high if they figure out a way to find that identity and have everybody buy into that identity. It could be special.
Does it have to be a specific thing? Like, I remember for like 3 weeks last year when the Texans were rolling, they were playing well. It's like, okay, the RPO, that's their identity. Like, does this style, does this team with the talent that they have, do they have to have a specific, like the Rockets, obviously, small ball, three and drive to the rim. Defensively,
do you mean does it have to be specific?
Yeah, with the talent that they have, does the identity, you know, do you have a thought on what the identity should be?
Yes, it should be an aggressive, up-tempo, spread approach.
And we're going to beat you with our offense. Stop us if you dare.
We're going to dictate to you what we're going to do offensively. We're not going to sit back
and adjust to what you're doing
and let you get your feet set and then try to attack you. We're going to be on the attack. Because here's the deal.
That's what Kansas City does.
Oh, yeah. Kansas City does a great job of that. And in the process of doing it, they highlight Pat Mahomes. You know what I mean? They don't ask Pat Mahomes to do things. Let me put it this way. Pat Mahomes, they use his strengths really, really well within their identity, right? When it's all said and done, is some quarterbacks don't have any other option other than, hey, I've got to beat you between the ears. I've got to see where your weakness is and attack that weakness. Tom Brady's one of them. He's one of those guys that the strongest part of his game is playing between the ears, right? Adjusting the protection. It's the way he's always had to survive his entire life, and that's their identity. It's not that doesn't work. The thing is that's not playing to Deshaun Watson's strengths.
Yeah.
Right. That's not playing to his strengths, and so. You know, I don't know that it has to be specific as much as being aggressive, being up-tempo, incorporating the RPOs, some way incorporating consistently the zone read game, the quarterback plus one run game, and then you're dictating the defense what they can and can't do.
Yeah.
Right? And that's the style of ball that Deshaun Watson grew up playing. That's the style of ball that he played in college. That's the style of ball that we've seen in flashes over this past season work really, really well for the Texans.
Clinton, JB, at the 34th Annual Houston TriStar Collector Show at NRG Arena. The Astros are clearly the villains in Major League Baseball. I think we can all agree to that. They're the ones that are heavily involved in the cheating scandal. They're the ones that are having the Dodger fans bus up to Angel Stadium to boo the Astros and heckle the Astros. Well, an all-time great thinks so as well. Hank Aaron sounding off on the Houston Astros cheating scandal.
Were you surprised?
I was surprised.
They didn't steal signs back in your day?
They did. They didn't steal them that way.
Do you think the punishment fit the crime?
No, I don't. I think whoever did that should be out of baseball the rest of their life.
Big, big words from Hammer and Hank Aaron, the second all-time home run king in Major League Baseball. He's calling for a ban of the Houston Astro players for life.
Yeah, I mean, I can understand where Hank Aaron's coming from. I really can. I get it. There are a few outliers in the world that the greats that played this game, and they didn't either bend or break the rules or have success because somebody that they were on the team with was bending or breaking the rules. I think there's guys out there like Hank Aaron who apparently did it the right way and stayed within the rules and regulations the entire time. And, you know, he's going to have a problem with it.
Yeah.
The only problem with that is that if Hank Aaron were in a position of authority, he would have never gotten those answers out of those players. He would have never received honesty from those players. Those players were given immunity. That's why they were completely honest. And so if you run around handing out lifetime bans for guys that admit to using steroids or guys that admit to having stole signs electronically. You're never going to get the honest truth out of them. And so the problems are just going to compile in Major League Baseball, and nothing ever changes, right?
Yep.
And so I totally understand the frustration and his point of view. But when it's all said and done, you can't expect guys to come to the table and be completely honest and help you clean this game up and put a stop to a scandal without giving up something. You got to give up. Got to give up the ability to ban them from the game and to discipline them, and they'll be honest, and you can clean it up.
We had a texter at 713-572-4610 saying that Hammer and Hank is still angry that a cheater broke his home run record. Of course, Barry Bonds, heavy PED allegations, the one that broke Hank Aaron's career home run record. Now, the Astros in a position 2020 where obviously they're going to be the villains. Should they just embrace it? Should they just go, you know what? Yeah, we're the bad guys, and we're going to like being the bad guys. We're going to like being the team that goes into the other team's arena, and you're booing and yelling and heckling us from start to finish.
Well, JB, they don't have a choice. I mean, it's either embrace it or you're going to be miserable throughout the season, right? I mean, it's embrace it. It's the only option that they have. And I think they should embrace it to the fullest. I think they should have an alternate uniform, the black unis. I think they should travel. They should get off the plane the first time as the Miami Hurricanes did back in the day in fatigues. And I think they should have very aggressive walk-up music.
You have anything in mind?
No. Do I have anything in mind for my walk-up music?
For the walk-up music specifically. I like a good little walk-up
ESG
music.
ESG swanging and banging.
That's the one you like.
That's it. That's it. Yeah, there's a little message in there. There's a little message in the bottle for sure. Just to let y'all know, I mean, I hear you talking, and we're embracing it. Yeah, I mean, look, I just think that they've got to embrace it. Obviously, I don't even know that Major League Baseball would allow alternate uniforms. I don't even know if that's a thing in Major League Baseball. I loved it in college football.
They have alternates, but it might be too late in the game.
And so, you know, get some all black unis, nose to toes black unis, and change the walk up music, and I'd be good to go.
Yeah, it'll be fun. The 2020 season, Houston Astros will be the team that everybody boos going into next year. We'll see how the Astros handle it. And of course, that was a big reason why Jim Crane hired the manager Dusty Baker to take the pressure a little bit off of the players. Clint Sterner, Jeremy Branham coming up next on Houston Sports Leader, Sports Radio 610. Last night was a good night for the Rockets, but let's be honest about it. It's one game, small sample size. There were some few areas of concern as well. Are those concerns real? We tell you what those concerns are next on Houston Sports Leader, Sports Radio 610. Clint Sterner, Jeremy Branham, the Houston Rockets getting a statement victory one game after the trade for Robert Covington, defeating the Lakers by 10 in L.A. Clint, we've been hearing it all day. Small sample size. It's just one game. Lakers, you know, game in the middle of the regular season. There were some issues still, even though the Rockets got this 10-point victory, and there's some concerns that we should address, we should talk about, and we're going to keep our eyes on it going forward the rest of the year.
Yeah, look, JB, the win last night was impressive. It validated the Capella-Covington trade. It showed the Rockets have an identity that they're committed to. They're all bought in. And I saw a different Harden that I loved. All those things are big-time takeaways from a statement win last night in L.A. But look, there's definitely a few things that stuck out as a concern. I think the first concern to me is P.J. Tucker. I think we even mentioned this earlier in the week that he had a full slate of an NBA season as was before the Covington move was really, really difficult on P.J. Tucker. He's 35 years old, man. There's a lot of mileage on them bones, man. He's playing a lot of minutes, and he's an effort guy. He's always on the floor. So he is a guy that fatigue is an issue. Fatigue's always been something that he's got to keep in check, and that's always been a concern because of his style of play. After this move, you saw last night that teams that are going to be able to throw centers, that are going to be able to throw big-bodied seven-footers at the Rockets, there's one guy that's going to be responsible for them, and that is P.J. Tucker. And P.J. Tucker got leaned on heavily last night. He's going to get leaned on more heavily moving forward. But last night, Anthony Davis was a guy that P.J. Tucker did a good job. They did a good job containing him. They did a good job helping him. But, man, it was a brutal four quarters for a guy like P.J. Tucker. And the question is can he stand up Can he stand up to a season of that, right? But more importantly, can P.J. Tucker's body withstand a seven-game series against the Lakers with the ability to throw those 3 7-footers out there? Or some of the other teams in this league that have the ability to throw a big at you. So P.J. Tucker's his ability to stay healthy and stay at or near 100% where he can play at or near his ceiling is a major concern with this style of ball, JB.
Yeah, he's a 6'5", 6'6", guy, too, that's going to be banging on centers most nights. So he's gonna have nights, too, where he gets in foul trouble as well. So you talk about, you know, the durability, the age. Can he do this night in, night out? Someone who's in his late 30s. And I'm interested. Last night we saw Tabo Cephalosha kind of used as a backup for Tucker a little bit in spots. Bruno is somebody who's going to come over. I wonder how many minutes he gets. But maybe those will be a couple of options that can try to ease the burden on Tucker a little bit. I'm also curious if Robert Covington can do it at times, because with his length, you know, he might be a matchup against some of the skinnier tall centers.
Yeah, look, I think Robert Covington will be able to move into that role and take some of those minutes away from P.J. Tucker on the defensive end of the floor. You know, I mean, I do believe that. He is long, and I think he's not as thick as P.J. Tucker, but I do think he's wiry. I do think he's a guy that can get in there and at the very least not get pushed around. I also think this, JB, I think that especially throughout the season, you know, I think you'll see Tyson Chandler, as we mentioned, get in there and take some of those minutes off of P.J. Tucker and allow him to recover and maybe not take the beating that he would have to take otherwise. And so that may be a good one-off, a good counterpunch to what the Rockets are doing right now, to be able to throw Tyson in there for, I don't know, 10 minutes a night, you know, in a series or something, and have a certain package, a certain approach where at least on the defensive end of the ball you got that rim protector. It could be one-off. I don't know how they do it, but I know that spelling P.J. Tucker is obviously something that that Covington can do, but it's going to be a task for the coaching staff and for this roster, this lineup, to figure it out.
Clinton, JB, going over some of the concerns that the Rockets had in there with their small ball approach, despite the statement victory in Hollywood against the Lakers yesterday. Another one's going to be how the officials officiate this small lineup.
Yes.
A little bit early in the first quarter, they were kind of letting them play. Anthony Davis was getting frustrated with the officials early. He kept barking at the officials. So I'm curious how the refs handle the Rockets small ball lineup and the swarming defense that they'll have going forward against the Bigs.
Well, look, they're going to have to play an aggressive style of defense down low in the paint when teams try to attack, right? And it's P.J. Tucker's the one, again, that comes to mind, that not only his durability and his health, but, you know, his ability to stay out of foul trouble is going to be key. I mean, when he gets down there, they are clearly targeting him once he gets to that 3-foul mark, to where they're trying to run it up and get him out of the game. And that's something, too, that the Rockets are going to have to combat. Here's the thing is that, it's one of those deals where if the refs are letting them play, then it ain't going to matter. But if you get into a game or a series where the refs are calling a little tic-tac fouls, particularly on the smaller guys trying to bang the bigger guy a little bit harder, then the Rockets are going to be in trouble because they don't have an answer. There's one time last night where – what's my man at the other 7-footer, the third 7-footer for the Lakers?
Kuzma?
Nope. Nah, he no 7-footer. Nope. The third one. Played with the Golden State Warriors.
Are you talking about for L.A.?
Yes.
I can't remember.
Where's the headband? Who?
Oh, you're talking about JaMale McGee.
Yes.
JaMale McGee.
Yeah. He at one point, they throw the ball the length of the floor, and he puts two hands in the middle of, I think it was McLemore House.
He did twice.
In the middle of his back and pushes him, bends him over, catches the ball. They call the foul on McLemore. And so it's one of those where, or House, one of them. But it's one of those deals where when you get into those types of situations, the refs can really, really swing the game with style of ball that the Rockets are just, they don't have no choice. They have to play on the defensive end of the floor. Good thing is that when you're playing a five-man rotation and your goal is to keep five shooters on the floor at all time, and you've got two or three coming off the bench that you believe in can fill it up, then at least you've got an answer.
Yeah, you have some options there for Mike D'Antoni, and that's what Daryl Morey said after the trade, was they felt like they had 10 guys currently that Mike D'Antoni can go to on this team right now. The Rockets last night used 9 of those. One of the other concerns I've heard people talk about today is the fact that, well, the Rockets aren't going to shoot 45% from 3 every single night. They were 19 of 42 last night against the Lakers, 45% from behind the three-point line. There's some folks, some school of thought that think that that's not something that's sustainable over a long stretch of time.
Yeah, you know, I think that's a fair takeaway from last night's game. Is, man, they were 10 of 18 at half from the three-point line. I mean, they were shooting that thing lights out now. So they not only do they shoot it at a high clip, is you look late in that game, Robert Covington hit two shots that separated them from the Lakers on the scoreboard and really made it difficult for the Lakers to even take the last couple of possessions serious. So when you look at that percentage, you also got to take into account they shot it at a high clip in the right moments as well. So can they duplicate that 4 out of 7 games in a 7-game series? Maybe. I'll argue this, is that they were going to have to do that whether Capella was here or not. Right. That ain't going to do with style. That, I mean, the Rockets that I know, the Rockets that I've watched over the last few years and that I've discussed since we've been on the air with Sports Radio 610 over the last couple of years, if the Rockets that I know didn't shoot it well, they weren't winning. I don't give a damn if Hakeem Olajuwon was in the paint.
Right.
Right. These guys are shooting the rock from the perimeter, and if they don't knock down shots, then they're not going to win the game. And the good thing is that the Rockets now have multiple guys that can shoot the rock. So if Eric Gordon is not shooting the ball well, he was 0-for-12 the other night. If he's not shooting the ball well, well, you pull him out and you insert a guy that can knock him down. So, I don't know that it's a style of play that is necessarily going to give them a chance to make a run to a championship, but I think it's going to give them a much better chance to make that run than what they were doing with Capella.
I love the shots that they got, too. They were getting a bunch of open looks. That played a big role in the fact that they shot 45%. One of the concerns I had was a little bit on the defensive side of the ball, especially early in the first half, getting adjusted to what they're trying to do, getting adjusted to Robert Covington. But there were some times when the switches weren't there. The defense communication wasn't there. There was a couple times, too, whenever like you're trying to get some help side defense to try to take away a pass from on the opposite side of the block that led to some easy dunks. So the defense at times was not great, and Anthony Davis did score 32 points. So the defense is still something that I'm concerned about going forward.
Yeah, I think I'm concerned about it, but not for the reasons you are. I think they know, JB, that they're going to have to be super active. And look, sometimes when they've got to double a guy down low when he catches it in the paint, or they've got to rotate, they're going to be faster because they got smaller guys on the floor. But I think they're willing to just bite the bullet of sometimes they're not going to rotate in time. Sometimes they're going to get taken advantage of on the defensive end of the floor because of that height. Where I'm concerned about it is the one thing about AD is AD spends a lot of time around the perimeter himself. You know, he spends a lot of time wanting to catch the ball up around the elbow or wanting to catch the ball, outside the paint. I'm anxious to see how they defend the guys that really want to stay on the block, you know, the guys that have the ability and are comfortable and would prefer to play with their back to the basket on the block. You know, there's just a couple of guys out there that I'm anxious to see them play down the road, and we'll see how that goes. But that's the deep, like when that happens where there's constantly a guy on the block, like Rudy Gobert.
Yeah,
he's going to be on the block.
Yeah, hard double for me.
Yeah, I mean, he doesn't bring a whole lot to the table offensively to where you just go, uh-oh, what are we going to do?
Yeah.
But I am anxious to see, okay, well, how are you going to defend that guy every time down the floor? Now, if you're shooting the rock well and you can separate, it don't matter, right? You know, you ain't worried about Rudy Gobert making twos. You ain't worried about him two-hand dunk. But if the game's close late in the game or in a critical moment in the game, and they go down, catches the ball on the block, how are you going to defend that?
Right.
I think going in, you knew, you literally put a game plan around how you were going to defend AD, right? I wonder how they're going to handle those true around the basket, around the rim, in the paint type of centers when they come across them.
A lot of it's going to be just positioning, right? Beating the guy to the spot, not letting him run through you. And, like, you can rebound with a small team. You can rebound with a 6'6 guy. You can rebound with a bunch of 6'5 guys. But it's going to take, you know, everybody crashing the boards. And there was times yesterday where there was a couple of chances where not every Rocket was crashing the board. If you're not going to have any size on the floor, the way you can counter that is with five guys trying to crash the boards and get the rebounds. And the same thing defensively. Like, it's not one-on-one defense now when you have a bunch of 6'6 dudes. Like, you have to play as a collective defense, the rotations, talking on the defensive side.
My man over here at Big Six Barbecue, he said it was Tyson Chandler's the answer, right? Which I love that safety valve, man. I look over at Tyson Chandler and he got toes up on the bench like he's at a picnic, man, in the middle of a damn game. I don't know. They got to be saving him for the playoffs. Literally saving him for the playoffs. He didn't even touch the floor. And but he's a guy to me. Like, how do you put him on the floor if you get to a point where you need Tyson Chandler on the floor? How do you put him on the floor, and what does that do to your offense, right? Because now your offense can't stretch it. And so there'll definitely be a plan to incorporate Tyson Chandler moving forward, particularly in the playoffs, some way, shape, or form, as a counterpunch. And I'm interested to see how exactly Mike D'Antoni does that. So, look, I mean, when you talk about last night's game, it was a great game, JB. There's no doubt about it. It was a statement game for the Rockets. But there were definitely some things that stuck out. P.J. Tucker's durability is one of them. The ref's ability to swing this game, because you constantly got small bodies banging on the bigger bodies. They got to play an aggressive style. If you get some quick-whistled refs, they can swing the game. And are the Rockets always going to shoot it at that ridiculous clip? You hope so. But a lot of good went into last night for them to come out with a W. There are some concerns.
Another opportunity to see that team in action tonight as they take on the Phoenix Suns in the desert. A.J. Hinch went on MLB Network. Clinton J.B. at the 34th Annual TriStar Collector Show. Yep, former Astro manager A.J. Hinch talking for the first time about his firing from the Houston Astros. He sat down with Tom Verducci of MLB Network. A few things he had to say we'll get to. First, A.J. Hinch talked about what he is taking responsibility for.
You know, it happened on my watch, and I'm not proud of that. I'll never be proud of it. I didn't like it. But I have to own it, because in a leadership position, I mean, the commissioner's office made it very, very clear. The GM and the manager were in position to make sure that nothing like this happened, and we fell short.
Sounds to me, you know, A.J. Hinch trying to take a little responsibility here. Yeah. Sounds like a guy that wants to manage again a little bit as well, getting ahead of the PR a bit. But that was A.J. Hinch on, you know, feeling a little responsible for all of this.
Well, look, we talked about that the minute that it went down, and that the minute that Jim Crane decided to further the discipline and fire the GM and fire the manager of the Astros. And we can point blame all we want, but when the commissioner comes down and says, if anything continues to happen, we're going to drop the hammer on the GM and we're going to drop the hammer on the manager. And you still allow these types of things to happen, hell, you don't have any choice but to say, hey, man, it was on my watch. I regret it, and it'll never happen again, but it was on my watch. And so I commend him for just making the point and making the statement that, hey, the commissioner asked us not to allow that, and we allowed it, and so consequences are what they are.
More A.J. Hinch. He was asked by Tom Verducci if he was surprised by the decision of Major League Baseball.
I felt responsible from the beginning, and so I knew there was going to be punishment. And if you feel responsible as a leader, like, punishment's going to happen. I didn't know to what extent. I didn't know where the commissioner was going to come in on it. And I was focused entirely on that and our team. I wanted to protect our team. I wanted to shelter our team from everything. And so I knew I was going to be suspended to some extent. And this was something that was never happened before, so nobody really knew how many games or what was going to happen. But when I got the news that it was a full year, that was a tough blow. I mean, that's taking me away from the sport that I love, the sport that I've been around for over two decades. After that, when I met with Jim and subsequently lost my job, that created a whole nother part of the day that I didn't anticipate.
It's an interesting, you know, wrinkle to look at, or an interesting perspective to look at it, that, you know, Hinch knowing the investigation's going on, and he can see it all play out from, you know, a view that we weren't, you know, privy to see, and he knew that at some point some punishment was going to come down, so he's basically just waiting for his sentence, and when he finds out it's a year, I'm sure that was pretty difficult for A.J. Hinch to take.
Yeah, well, you know, because you know when they discipline you for a year, suspend you for a year from the entire league, then you know at that moment in time that anything that you've done, any success that you've had is going to be tarnished, right? Talking about the 2017 season, the 2018 season, the 2019 season, regardless of what happened during those seasons, to what extent it was bad enough, what was discovered was bad enough for him to get disciplined to the tune of banned from the league for a year. So I can only imagine the emotions that ran through him at that point in time when he realized what was coming down the pipeline.
Let's get another one from A.J. Hinch, doing a one-on-one interview with Tom Verducci on MLB Network. Hinch describes or tells us when Jim Crane made the decision to let A.J. Hinch go.
Yeah, I was in that day. I went downtown to, which is normal in the off season for me, and I was at the stadium, and I was waiting for players to kind of show up for their rehab or their workouts or what was ever going on. And I got notified that was the day that we were going to get the letter, and it was going to come via email. And so I waited and got the email. Then I was asked to come up, or Jim called me and said, "Hey, can you come down to Houston? Because I live about 30 miles north of Houston." And I said, "Well, I'm already here." And he said, "Come on upstairs." And so I went up and had a very emotional conversation with Jim. So it happened fast, and then the press conference happened shortly after the meeting with me. But I was able to have a face-to-face with Jim, you know, both of us being emotional that it had gotten to that point. And then I had to focus on my family and get my kids out of school before it hit their phones, you know, things you never have to think about until it happens. Like, I didn't want it to pop up on my daughter's phones at school. Needed to tell my wife and then get everybody home.
Pretty powerful from a couple of point of views. For the first one, is that look how quickly the Jim Crane acted. You know, they got the email that morning on how long the suspensions were going to be. A.J. Hinch saying that he was already there at the office, and then Crane called him up right after that. And then it sounded like it happened within an hour or so that Crane was calling Hinch up to his office or after the meeting that he set the press conference where he announced it to the public.
Yeah, look, I commend Jim Crane for moving with a sense of urgency, right? I mean, I think those types of situations come up, and I think it's human nature to drag them out because you don't want to deal with the emotions that are. So I commend the dude for acting with a sense of urgency and making a move. But I at the same time, I feel for a guy like A.J. Hinch, who, again, it's no longer about a paycheck, right? It's no longer about a World Series. It's about how do I get to school where my kids are at so that they're not poked fun at and they don't find out in front of everybody and it be a spectacle in their lives. And so, yeah, I mean, there's a human side to both of these guys, and it's unfortunate. But when you look at the business side of it and the professional sports side of it, I salute the hell out of Jim Crane for the sense of urgency that he used in dealing with the situation.
Yeah, it is crazy looking at it from like the human element of things too, and A.J. Hinch having to go to the schools of his daughters to pull them out and deliver the news himself. I was following along on Twitter, Clint, and one of the things that he got asked by Tom Verducci that we didn't get to quite yet was Tom Verducci asked him about the buzzers in 2019 and if he, you know, what he, they asked him to use buzzers in 2019, and A.J. Hinch didn't, what he said was, "I'm going to defer to what the commissioner said in the report." It didn't give a no to that answer from Verducci. He said, I'm just going to defer to what it said in the report. I found that to be pretty interesting, and just looking at what's going on Twitter and the conversation of it, that's something that stood out to many people who watched this.
Yeah, I bet it did. I mean, there's going to be speculation in every answer from A.J. Hinch, and that's one of the reasons why I'm not a big fan of the apology aspect of this thing, is those guys, regardless of what they say, it's going to be pulled apart, misconstrued. It's going to be gas on the fire. And so I don't blame him for pleading the fifth.
He was asked later, too, if he wanted to manage again, and he said that he does want to manage again, which will be interesting, too. I imagine that this was the reason that he put together this one-on-one with Verducci, was he wanted to handle the PR side of it a little bit as well. But do you think he will manage again in Major League Baseball?
Ah, man, I don't know. The way they came down on him, I don't know. I mean, giving him the year, the fact that he lost his job long term from the organization and not from Major League Baseball obviously leaves the door open. When you first asked me that question, I thought about Alex Cora and my man.
Beltran.
And Beltran. You know, I thought about those guys. I think that's a little different situation more than likely. But yeah, I think A.J. Hinch will coach again.
Yeah, I think he'll manage again as well. It's going to wrap it up for us. I want to thank everybody here at the TriStar Collector Show for having us out. I want to thank our street team, George Arriaga, our on-site engineer. For Clint Sterner, I'm Jeremy Branham. Thanks so much. Figgy Fig doing double duty today, by the way, as well. We'll talk to you later, Houston.